Our first author tells of his father, a moving story. Some would rather not experience what he went through, why he never saw his father. Sad and true, a tale of the war, and why his father what? No, he will tell you, because it is his story. I must not wreck it. Will you welcome Francis Beckett?
Thank you very much. I don't feel I can tell anybody anything after that. Certainly not about my father, although my father also had his store of stories. He was imprisoned during the Second World War under Regulation 18B as considered a danger to the war effort. And there were two groups of prisoners walking around the prison yard in Brixton at that time in 1940. There were those who were still loyal to Mosley and those, like my father, who had quarrelled from Mosley. And they were on opposite sides of the exercise yard because they couldn't be allowed to mix. And one day, my father told me, because he was quite good at stories like that, one day one of the Mosley contingent detached himself and came running over and he said, "Hail Mosley," because they really did talk like that. He said, "Hail Mosley. The leader instructs me to tell you that at this desperate time for our country, it is time to put past differences aside. And he wants me to offer you a place in his provisional government." And my father said that he didn't really want a place in Mosley's provisional government. And the chap went back to report, and he came back a little while later, and he said, "Hail Mosley, the leader says, if that's your attitude, you shan't be in the provisional government at all." The story, briefly, is this: my father fought in the First World War, became in 1924 the youngest Labour member of Parliament of his time, at the age of only 29. He was fluent. He thought he could move anything. He could move great audiences. He thought he could do anything. And he found himself in the Parliamentary Labour Party. And I think Chris Mullin will tell you that you can't actually do an awful lot in the Parliamentary Labour Party. So, after struggling with it for a while, he joined the Independent Labour Party, which was the left-wing ginger group in the Parliamentary Labour Party. He became the wildest, the most extreme of his time. In 1930, he rushed up to the Speaker's table, picked the mace, and tried to rush out of the chamber with it. He was captured on his way out, and he always said afterwards that he had intended, in his words, to place it in one of the magnificent porcelain receptacles to be found in the gentlemen's toilets. But he didn't get that far. The police got him first. The Daily Mail, incidentally, in its review of my book, headlined it, "The Man Who Shoved the Mace Down the Toilet." And he wished he had, but he never quite made it. He lost his seat in 1931 when he fought as an independent because the Labour Party put a candidate against him. 1933, he joined Sir Oswald Mosley's British Union of Fascists as its head of publications. He edited all the Mosley propaganda for some years, until he quarrelled with Mosley in 1937, and he left Mosley together with another senior fascist official called William Joyce, better known to some of you as Lord Haw-Haw. He and William Joyce founded something called the National Socialist League. 1940, he went to Brixton Prison. Just to lighten this, by the way, not easily lightened, but I was talking to my old friend Dennis McShane the other day, and he and I worked out that Dennis was the first member of Parliament to occupy Brixton Prison since my father. I'm not sure whether that gave Dennis any pleasure, but it gave it gave me a bit of entertainment. He spent nearly 4 years in Brixton Prison in various prisons in Brixton, in Liverpool, on the Isle of Man internment camp. He was let out in late 1943, which explains why I turned up in May 1945. I won't go into the whole of his life after the war because, well, there were only 19 years of it, because I have finally established that copies of my book have arrived, incidentally. Routledge never managed to get copies of my book here, but there are some outside now. I'm delighted to be able to tell you we did have a little panic about that. But my book is partly about my father and the very strange life that he led and the very strange convulsions that he went through and what happened to him. But it is also partly about me. I grew up believing all sorts of very strange things. You know how you take in ideas, you take in beliefs, almost by a process of osmosis from your parents. One of the things that I, by the age of about 7, knew for certain, and I'm now not even quite certain how I acquired this, was that the Jews had falsely ensured that my father should be in prison for nearly 4 years as part of a world Jewish conspiracy. I grew up believing, I think by the age of 7 or perhaps 8, I was aware of something called the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, which was a forged White Russian document. Many of you have heard of it, I've no doubt, which was supposed to prove that there was a world Jewish conspiracy. I believed all sorts of very strange things, not as a thought-through process, not even that I could actually remember, I could actually put my finger on the moment when I heard this, but as though I had acquired the information somehow that I knew to be true. I remember I was just talking to my old friend Chris Kaufman, who is sitting beside me, who is a former national official for the Unite Trade Union. I first met Chris in the late 70s. And I think I must have thought, I think one of the things that must have instantly said to me, this man is going to be one of my friends, is the fact that he was a Jewish communist. He embodied what my father had warned me against. He still is Jewish. I remember, and my time is nearly running out, but I just want to tell you one or two more stories about that. I remember waking up one morning and finding that they had found where we lived. On the wall opposite our house was a huge, crudely painted sign that said, "Fascist, go home." Fascist was spelt SH in the middle. I remember my parents, who loved me, who thought very highly of me, who whose love for me had struck them like a thunderbolt a little unexpectedly. I remember my parents worrying about when I went out, worrying about what I looked like when I went out, worrying about the watchers, because we were watched all the time. We were watched by the security services. One of the joys of writing this book has been to go through the MI5 files on my father, to find out all the things that he was writing when I was a child, to find out the letters he was writing, the things he was saying, what he was saying to everybody. To find, for example, the letter that he wrote when I must have been a little baby sleeping upstairs to his old friend William Joyce, who was 2 weeks away from being hanged. And he must have put me to bed one night and sat down and wrote, "I feel an urgent need to write to you, yet find it very difficult to say anything very adequate to the occasion. I know you too well to imagine there is any need to offer you consolation or exhort you to courage." And then he wrote, "Our children will grow up to think of you as an honest and courageous martyr in the fight against alien control of our country." This went on for a couple of pages. Joyce wrote back pages and pages and pages of it. Of course, I remember quite vividly how we discussed the situation in 1938. That was a coded way of saying a conversation that I know took place when William Joyce asked my father if he would go to Germany with him. My father, who made so many bad decisions in his life, made one good decision. He didn't go to Germany with William Joyce. Now, I finish now by saying only this, that if I were writing this book now instead of last year, if I was writing it after the strange events that happened last year, I'd be making much more, I think, of what's going on now. The word fascist, it's a strange word. Nobody has really defined it. If you say that somebody is a libertarian or a socialist or a one-nation Tory or any of those things, you know roughly what it is they believe, what sort of society they're after, what sort of society they want to achieve. If you say they're fascist, you don't know any of that. Because the essence of it is that you follow a leader, that the leader knows what is best, that the leader will make sure that your country comes first, whether it's Britain or America. That the leader understands better than you do. When I watched Donald Trump's rallies, I thought that the prototype for them was Mosley's rallies. When I watched people being ejected from them, I thought, yes, I've read about that. I've read about people being thrown out of the Albert Hall in 1936. It looked terribly the same. It looked terribly similar. When I read about him being described as a narcissist, I remembered that all the most recent thinking about Mosley is that what was wrong with him, essentially, was a kind of narcissism. I think in every sense in which I understand the word, we're seeing a resurgence of fascism, and America is leading the way. Thank you very much.
For more information about The Oldie, go to theoldie.co.uk. This podcast was produced by RadioGorgeous.com 2017.